Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, 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 and thank you so much for listening. Today is truly an amazing day. This is episode number 1,000. Yes, 1,000. Wow. I am humbled and honored to be with you, and I know that many of you listeners have listened to all 1,000 episodes, but even more, I know that some of you have listened to all, I should say, 999 episodes. Once, twice, maybe even three times, I have heard from many of you that you've listened to every episode several times. So thank you so much for doing that and sticking with us for all of these years. This is, of course, Jason Hartman, your host, and what an amazing day. I mean, every single episode we've done over the last many, many years, getting us to episode 1,000 today. And episode 1,000 is also a 10th episode show. So you know what that means, regular listeners. We go off topic and discuss something of general interest. And today we will have a famous celebrity with us. Yes, the famous singer-songwriter Colby Calais. I discovered Colby Calais several years ago in our office, when we used to have an office in Irvine, California. And Brittany, who still works with us, I said, "Who sings this song?" And I really like the song. And she says, "That's Colby Calais." So now she's on the show, and I'm interviewing her today. So what a neat thing for episode 1000. But before we get to Colby Calais, you know, so many of you over the years have been on the show, and you have shared your story, your tips, your heartaches, your difficulties, your successes, and all of the things that have come out of your real estate investing career with us. Well, I shouldn't really say career, because for the vast majority of you, it's not a career, it's an investment. And you've got a full-time career, you own a business, or you have a corporate job. I know we have a lot of people in the software business, a lot of technology people, a lot of people that work in Silicon Valley, but people that work in every industry from every walk of life, people that are buying one or two or three properties, and people that are buying 30, 40, 50 or more properties. It really spans the gamut. And you've been so generous to come on the show and share your stories, your client case studies. And we appreciate that. And in a moment, we're going to play a couple of clips from those. You may hear your own voice on these. Of course, we couldn't get all of you on the show. So I want to apologize in advance for that. There was no way to do it in the time that we have, but we got several of you. And we've also been so fortunate to have so many famous guests, so many thought leaders. I mean, I just couldn't even name them all. We've had just great, great guests on the show, many of whom I really admire their work and enjoy them, and some that I really disagree with them. And, you know, I've had some arguments on the show over the years as well, and it's been really fun just learning from all of them. And so first, we're going to have a little montage of some of our guests, and our editor actually found, that's Adam, of course. Many of you have met him at Meet the Masters, or he's been on the show, of course. He found the intro from episode number one. So we're going to start with that, looking back here today, and do that. And then we'll be back for a moment, and then we'll have a little bit of a listener montage, or a little bit of a client and listener guest montage. So here we go. Good afternoon. This is Jason Hartman. Thanks for joining us this afternoon on Creating Wealth. I want to welcome you to an exciting and innovative new listening experience. While the topic is as old as the hills, real estate, I'm going to show you a new way to use real estate to become truly wealthy, the old-fashioned way, slow and steady.
Yes, in the No Hype Zone, we'll show you how to structure your real estate investments properly. We'll talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, the real world of real estate, and how to actually implement strategies on a daily basis in the real world. So here we go.
It is my pleasure to welcome back to the show Bruce Norris. He is president of the Norris Group, and you've probably heard of Bruce. He is quite a well-known guru in the industry. He makes predictions that happen to come true, and I'm just glad to have him back on the show. He was on the show a long, long time ago, and Bruce, welcome back. Pleasure to welcome Dr. Ben Carson to the show. He is a famed conservative neurosurgeon and author of the book One Nation, What We Can All Do to Save America's Future. Very timely title, Ben. Welcome. How are you? It's my pleasure to welcome a name that you are all very familiar with, and it is Mr. Steve Forbes, who doesn't really need an introduction, but his body of work is so comprehensive as a presidential candidate, the author of numerous books, and of course, Forbes magazine. Steve, welcome. How are you? It's my pleasure to welcome Robert Kiyosaki back to the show. Of course, you know his name. He's an international bestseller, and he wrote the number one personal finance book of all time, which you've probably read. It's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And we're going to talk about his latest work today, which is entitled Rich Dad Scams, 8 Financial Scams Disguised as Wisdom. And Robert, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
It's my pleasure to welcome Pat Buchanan to the show. As you well know, Pat Buchanan is a scholar, an author, and a political expert, and it's just great to talk to him. Thank you for taking the time.
It's my pleasure to welcome Noam Chomsky to the show. You've probably heard his name. He's an American linguist, philosopher, cognitive scientist, political commentator, and activist. He has worked at MIT for most of his life, where he currently serves as a professor emeritus, and he has authored over 100 books on various subjects.
It's my pleasure to welcome T. Harv Eker to the show. He is, of course, the author, I'm sure you've heard his name, of Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, Mastering the Inner Game of Wealth. And he is a very well-known, number one New York Times bestselling author. And Harv, it is great to have you on the show. What an honor. It is my great pleasure, and when I say great, I am not embellishing that comment, to have Dr. Dennis Waitley on the show with us today. He is one of America's most respected authors, keynote lecturers, and productivity consultants in the field of high-performance human achievement. Dennis has a tremendous background. He is the author of numerous books, which I have read, many of them. And I tell you, when I was 17 years old, I discovered Dr. Waitley and Walden Books in Cerritos Mall. And if there is one thing that has changed my life and one person that has changed my life, it is Dr. Waitley. I picked up a copy of an audiobook when audiobooks were just becoming popular called The Psychology of Winning, 10 Qualities of a Total Winner. And I listened to that approximately 150 times in the next 30 days. I had a long commute, and Dennis really impacted my life. He helped me discover Earl Nightingale and Jim Rohn and many of the other motivational and inspirational greats that our culture has produced. And it is just such a pleasure to have Dr. Dennis Waitley with us here today. Dennis, welcome.
My pleasure to welcome Dr. Gary Chapman to the show. He is a very well-known marriage counselor and director of marriage seminars. His very, very famous work, he has many of them, but his probably most famous is The 5 Love Languages. And it has sold upwards of 6 million copies, translated into 40 languages, and has been on the number one spot of the New York Times bestseller list and on many other bestseller lists. It's a pleasure to have Gary from North Carolina today. Gary, welcome. How are you?
So yes, it was great to have so many great guests on the show over the years, and there are so many more. We could not possibly cover them all, but there are just a few that you just heard. And now it's you. We've had so many of you, so many clients on the show, so many listeners on the show that have shared their personal real estate investing experience really openly and candidly, and I just love you for that. I so appreciate you doing that on the show, because that's what we are all about here, is the real world view of this. So let's listen in. And again, I know we couldn't get all of you on the show. There are so many of you. Here are just a few.
The people that I've been introduced to, from Sarah to Karen next door, the person that handles your organizational things around
here. Our operations
here.
Manager, yeah.
The people in the markets, to the financing people, property managers, and your local real estate experts, they've been just more than helpful. I mean, seriously. And that's why I'm back for more. I'll be buying more properties this month. And as you point out, it's a little bit of work up front, really. Yeah. The work's up front. And later on, as with my other properties, it's really not too bad. and the returns are just outstanding. The downside, it's not that significant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's just a wonderful program. You're doing a great service for people. So I would just like to add that.
If you don't have any investment, real estate investment, you would not have the opportunity to learn to make mistakes, learn from it. And then you would not be able to tell which one is a better investment. I think you just have to get it started somewhere and with the help of your investment counselor, and then just keep moving forward.
Thanks for your support, Jason. I appreciate yours and Carrie's support and your whole network. It's really been very beneficial to me and a whole lot of others. I encourage everyone to use your resources that you have. But thanks, Jason.
Yeah, my passion for real estate really has taken over my passion for technology. So it's been really fun, you know, over these 6 years, getting closer and closer into real estate to the point that I can really, it's my day job now, focusing on real estate, being able to have the time to participate in the Venture Alliance mastermind group, which I adore, and it has added an incredible amount of value to me. And then also being able to have the time to go to, like I'm going to the Oklahoma City property tour that's coming up. And I'm super excited about that.
To give some other people who might be on the fence out there, it took me a while to buy into the concept of buying out of state. And that's really one of the things that I really attribute to you guys, all the podcasts, and then working with Oliver extensively in the beginning, just kind of working through that and how the numbers worked and the comfort level of it. But, you know, one of the things that I think did the best for me is after talking extensively with him, I think he might have paired me up with, you know, like almost like a match.com. Like he paired me up with the perfect local market specialist to fit my personality and my investment philosophy. And so I kind of attribute it to him, but I'm very, very happy with the way the transactions go and the way the interactions kind of all fluidly occur with it. Really has been a pretty seamless process.
Well, listeners and clients, thank you so much for sharing on the show over the years. And if any of you are out there listening and thinking you would like to come on the show and you'd like to share your story, share your tips, your ideas, your advice with the audience, we would love to hear that. You know, we are a community here. We are a community that shares ideas with each other and helps everybody just become more and more successful with the most historically proven asset class in human history. Income property, the most historically proven asset class in the entire world. And that's what we do here. We help with that. I am off to Philadelphia here in just a couple of days. But before that, I'm headed to Florida. I got some big announcements that I'm going to share with you on a future episode about that, by the way. But yes, I will see a lot of you in Philadelphia on May 19th. I'm looking forward to it. That event is not sold out yet, which I'm a little bit saddened about, to be honest with you. We usually do sell them out earlier than this, but we still got space in Philadelphia. We'd love to have you. We've got a gorgeous venue, gorgeous hotel. It's really going to be a great event. It's our only Creating Wealth event this year, and it's our first one in the Northeastern United States. So come see us in Philadelphia. Go to jasonhartman.com, click on events for more info on that. And then I'm staying in the Northeast, and I'm traveling to New York after that. I've got many, many appointments and meetings in New York City. And then we've got our Venture Alliance Mastermind in New York City on Memorial Day weekend. So I know I'll see a lot of you there as well. Anyway, let's get to our guest today, Colby Calais. Again, a 10th episode show. So we're talking with a singer-songwriter. We'll be back on all the future episodes talking about income property investing very specifically. But it's kind of fun every 10 shows to do something something kind of off topic of general interest. So today we have the wonderful and the fabulous Colby Calais.
I've been awake for a while now. You got me feeling like a child now. 'Cause every time I see a bubbly face.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome the fabulous Colby Calais to the show. I've been a big fan of her music for many, many years, and she's coming to us from Nashville today. Colby, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to have you on the show. You've just got a great career. You know, the first thing I'd like to ask you is, you started your career seemingly in a really unique way with MySpace. That was probably in the pretty early days of musicians using MySpace as a platform, I assume. What year was it, and how did you get the idea to do that? What's behind that?
I didn't have the idea. It was actually one of my friends from high school, and I think it was maybe the end of 2005, and then it was like well into 2006 when, you know, my friend put my songs, three of my songs up on MySpace. Well, I had these demos, and he was like, hey, have you heard of this thing called MySpace Music? And, you know, I wasn't even on Facebook at the time either, so I didn't know what any of that social media was. And I didn't. And so he made me this page and uploaded my demo songs up there. And somehow, I don't know how it happened, I just started getting a following, and people kept using my song as their like page music, which was so cool that you could do that then. And all of a sudden, within months, I was one of the top unsigned artists. And honestly, I had no idea how it happened. And it was really because my friend put my music up there.
That's fantastic. What were those first three songs?
Bubbly, The Little Things, and I want to say One Fine Wire, I think.
Good stuff. Yeah, I love Bubbly. That's a very romantical song. I love it. As my ex-girlfriend would like to say, romantical.
She
made up her own word. Good stuff. So the MySpace was the start. You know, music industry has obviously changed so dramatically over the past several years. Were you worried about copyright and sharing and, you know, people just taking your music? Or is this the kind of thing that the music industry should really just stop worrying about and, you know, get the revenue from another source?
That's an interesting question. I mean, at the time, honestly, I was so new at this. I had just started writing songs. Those were demos. My friend just said, put them up there. I wasn't thinking about people stealing songs because I was probably 4 or 5 months into being a songwriter, to be honest with you. Like, that's how new it was. I do miss the fact that we can't just put a song out. Like, I want to do that more often, like just put a song up, a new one, and see what people think. And I know that someone could take it and produce it by the time before I could even do that. And I know you have to worry about that now. I think at that time it wasn't even a thought.
Right. Well, that's good. So songwriting, I mean, I just have so much respect for musicians and I like all types of music. My musical taste is so eclectic. It kind of amazes me sometimes. I go everywhere from Rush to the Carpenters and John Denver. I mean, like, that's weird, but whatever. I have just massive respect for someone who can write a song. I mean, to me, like writing a book, that seems kind of, well, it's not easy, but, you know, you just take your ideas, put them in an outline form, and then you expand upon them, right? How do you write a song? And then beyond that, do you start with lyrics or do you start with a score? It amazes me how musicians can just arrange these beautiful lyrics and then put the music to it. Like, how do you know the guitar does this right there? And, you know, that's
What's
just mind-boggling.
That's how I think about writing a book or writing a movie. I don't even know where you begin to, like how many pages in a book, like that's so much writing. But to me, a song is easy because it's 3 minutes and you know the structure. There's a verse, a chorus, bridge, chorus. And so usually, like, all you have to do is really write a verse and a chorus, and sometimes you don't even need a bridge. And I feel like once you get into songwriting, you know how short the songs are, and it actually does, you can condense everything, you condense your thoughts, and you turn it into poetry, and somehow magically, it always blows my mind that every word rhymes. Like, anything that you want to say, you can find a rhyming word for it, which that trips me out too. But know how the process has started is always different. So sometimes we'll start on a guitar. Sometimes, like when I wrote Bubbly, I was on my guitar in my bedroom and I actually didn't know. My friend had done this new tuning on my guitar and I didn't know how to play it. So I was playing around with some chords and I found 3 chords that sounded good. And then I started singing and the melody and the words came out at the same time for most of the song.
So it doesn't start with words most of the time then?
It depends on everyone. So then I have another song I wrote for my friend and she was dating this guy. And anyways, I basically was just thinking of things about her and the guy that she was dating, and I just started writing stuff down. And then later on I had a writing session and we put a melody to those words. So it changes every time. Sometimes I'll just be in the bathroom and I'll hum a melody and a couple words will come out with it. And then I'll turn that into a chorus or a verse. And I think that it's ever changing. And that's what keeps it exciting and also keeps it a little challenging for as a songwriter is it comes out in all different ways.
Sure. Do you get writer's block? I mean, you must, I'm sure, right? You know, how do you find your inspiration? Do you go through a dry spell where you just can't, nothing is coming to you, and then maybe you'll, hear another song or a situation in your life or, you know, all of the above?
For me, that's how it happens is I'll write about whatever I'm going through. And then once I'm done with that, I feel like I have nothing more to write about. Then I'll tap into what my friends or family are going through. And I'll try to write about what they're, if they're going through a breakup or a divorce or something. And maybe if I've written something about that already, then I try to write it from a different perspective. So like when I wrote my song Fearless, I actually wrote it from the guy that I broke up with, his perspective, not my perspective of the breakup.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you have to get creative in that sense. So basically moving here to Nashville, I also realized something is that like whenever I would write about 60 songs for an album and that would be within 2 years. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is a lot of songs. But here in Nashville, the writers, all my friends, they write 1 to 2 songs a day, 5 days a week. And
that is amazing. Wow.
It's incredible. It's amazing that they know how to do that and they have that much creativity to flow out of them and to write songs. But for me, I've learned that it's not possible. I need life inspiration and real things to be expressing. And so to me, that means maybe writing a song every 4 months, one song every four months.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm learning. And I just started a band with some friends here and we wrote, I don't know, we've written like 20 songs in 4 months. And to me, I'm like, I'm done. I'm tapped out for
a while. You need a rest. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's different for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely is. It definitely is. Were you classically trained? I mean, did you take music theory classes and learn how to write songs or it just is something you'd just do as a really as a hobby, I guess?
When I was a teenager, my parents, they knew I wanted to sing. So they put me in vocal lessons. And then when I was 19, I took one guitar lesson and I learned 4 chords. They're like the simplest, the box chords, like seriously, like G, C, D, and E. Uh-huh. So you hardly have to move your fingers. And that is honestly how I wrote every one of my songs off my album, Coco. I cheated, basically. I used those chords and I would change the progression and I would change the capo on a different fret of the guitar so that it gave new sounds and tones to the guitar. And that actually led me to have to create more interesting melodies because the guitar playing was so basic mm-hmm. and the chords were so basic. But after that, no, I never had music. And I'm not a good guitar player either. Uh-huh. I can play to like write a little bit and that's my extent.
Sure, sure, sure. But that's amazing. So that's the only guitar lesson you've taken? Totally self-taught other than that? Or was that just the first one?
No, that's basically all I took, but I don't know more than that. That's what I'm trying to say. I should have been like my fiance, he'll teach me, like, mm-hmm. I'll be like, I want to play like my song, I Never Told You, how my band plays I Never Told
right,
You.
And right.
So he'll teach me new chords. So I've learned some like that. And he's taught me some stuff. Like that's how I know how to play Try on the piano is because my fiance taught me like the chords and now. Sure. But no, I haven't done any more, and I should, because I want to be a better guitar player.
But that's the ultimate example, really, of delegating, you know? I mean, you're just like a business person would do it. That's awesome. Hey, I've got a couple listener questions for you from our listeners. Jessica asks, who was Capri made for? If maybe, you know, some songwriters keep this stuff secret, like the Carly Simon, You're So Vain, you know, yeah, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So. No, I wrote Capri for my friend Barbara from high school. She had her first baby at, I think she was 19 or 20. Mm-hmm. I think she was 20. She was a single mom and she was naming her daughter Caprice, mm-hmm. but it didn't sound as well right. in the song. So I just shortened it to Capri. And so that song's for her.
Yeah, good, good stuff. Okay, so Marilyn asked, what are some of your other passions and what would you be doing now if you weren't in the music business? Or was music it? Was that the thing? Was that the only way to go?
That luckily happened for me because I was kind of a lazy teenager that wanted to do music, but I was never putting myself out there. Like I wouldn't have gone to label, bringing my music to labels. I was shy. And so when I was 18 or 19, I took like a couple classes in college, like interior design and photography. Those are things I really had an interest in that I still have an interest in. So I think I would have gone down one of those roads, but either way, they're still in the creative field.
In the creative world. Sure. Sure. Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Hey, here's a weird one. This is not creative, but a lot of our audience, Colby, is real estate investors and people interested in personal finance and stuff like that. You may have no answer for this. I do not know, but what are your thoughts on income property investing?
Oh, that's so funny.
Weird thought.
It's always been great and it still is great. I do some of that myself and my family. I move a lot. Like, we like living in different places. And so we buy a house.
Me too, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. So what you're saying, it's fun. And instead of wasting rent money, we just buy a house in the place that we're living and then we'll sell it. And then when we move, we'll buy in a different place. And sometimes you lose money doing it that way. And sometimes if you put enough back into it, you make money. But I think it's a really good thing. Yeah. It's a good safety net.
Good stuff. Are there any questions that you kind of wish you would be asked that people don't ask you during interviews?
I always volunteer stuff. Like, I've always had stage fright. I'm an introvert, so I'm like really shy. I'm a homebody.
Most people would consider that so odd, by the way. And, yeah. You know, we have a, I won't mention his name, but we have a very famous musician as our client, and it's amazing to see him in concert. I was standing on the stage at his concert recently, and, you know, he's just out there and just the audience. I mean, you know, 10,000 people, they're just screaming. And then he comes back and he's just the most mellow, quiet person. Doesn't that seem like a bit of a contradiction? Or tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a major contradiction, and it's a bummer for me because it's the hardest thing to get me to go up on stage and perform and sing a song. It is not natural. I mean, it's become more natural because mm-hmm. I've been doing it for 12 years now or whatever, but it's never something that I look forward to doing, unfortunately, to say. And only until a few years ago when I learned that I'm an introvert was when I knew that it's okay. Like, that now it's like acceptable. Before, I just thought I was weird and why did every other musician like it and not me? But now I just know, like, it's okay. We're all different and this is who I am. And I just need a little more encouragement to go on stage.
That's awesome. So speaking of being on stage, one of our listeners, that was Mel, asked, how do you take care of your health on tours? I mean, tours can be grueling, obviously. And there are actually, you know, there's a website, Musician Wellness, that he posted here when he asked that question. Any thoughts or tips about that?
Yeah, it's really hard. People think touring is fun and, you know, there can be moments of it for sure, but you're in a new city every day, you're on a bus with air conditioning, or you're flying every day, and you're basically always at the odds of getting sick somehow, and, you know, being on a bus with a bunch of people. Eating healthy, getting exercise on the road. Honestly, the wellness is taking care of yourself by the stuff that you put into your body and how you treat your body. And I think whenever I have got a cold, like, you take the herbal, you know, natural remedies, right, if possible, to get better and save your voice. And I think that's all I can say is doing those things, living that lifestyle will mostly prevent you from getting sick.
Getting sick on tour can be very costly and it can really bum a lot of fans out, right? Have you had to cancel an event before over being sick?
Yeah, I've had to cancel a few and it's a bummer because you have to make the show up and it changes everyone's plans. Oh, yeah. And it's costly for the tour because you have to bring everyone back out and do the same thing. And if you don't, then you have to take the actions of, like, I've had to take steroids the day of a show because that'll...
To get your voice back, right?
Yeah. And then that's only good for that day or two. And then it makes you even sicker or it's really bad for your body. So you try not to do that either.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. You know, I'm curious on your business model. Do you bring this other musician client of ours? He brings all of his, it's basically almost all his equipment, except for the big PA system, you know, that the venue always has. But a lot of it is his. And he says it's, you know, many, many trucks. When he goes overseas, they put it on ships. And the cost of bringing all that and doing an event, I mean, it was monumental. I couldn't believe it. Do you bring all that stuff with you? Is that part of your tour?
Yeah, everyone usually does. Unless you do off shows, you backline most of the things, but you always bring all of your musical equipment. I mean, we bring drums, guitars, and we bring extras in case something happens on the road.
Right.
We bring our, you know, our console with our sound, like the board, thing board. Like, we do all that because it has all of our settings already in it, and it makes the tour easier because all of our crew, they know exactly what to do, what to set up, and it's guaranteed going to work for them, which is time back.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Sure. Definitely. Hey, how many people on your crew, I guess, including the band members and then all the roadies, or do you call them roadies still? Engineers?
Yeah. There's usually, we have like 13. So we don't have a big crew because, you know, it's like, there's usually like seven crew and six or seven of us band members, roughly. Mm-hmm. Like, and it varies depending the tour. Sometimes we'll do an acoustic tour. Sometimes we have more stage decor set up. Like one time we brought a whole stage with us. So like mm-hmm. that, we had a semi truck and there were only two buses that we had, but really every tour is different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Okay. So Katie, one of our listeners asked, and she says, fangirl alert, at her wedding, as they walked down the aisle, they played Falling For You. It says, ask how you dealt with being rejected twice from American Idol, and how you overcame that and, you know, pushed through. I think I saw you in an interview or you mentioned somewhere that was actually a blessing. Like you weren't ready the first time, maybe, yeah. But there was a second rejection.
Absolutely. Yeah. I auditioned the second American Idol. And then I auditioned a couple years later with my song Bubbly, actually. And honestly, I didn't want to audition either time. I just was, you know, encouraged by friends and family that I can sing and I should audition. But I was nervous. I was a bad auditioner. Like I'm a bad test taker. I'm a bad auditioner and I get nervous. And so I think that even for me, my personality, like I'm an introvert, I wouldn't have been good on American Idol because I would have been shy and mm-hmm. very uncomfortable and probably done a bad performance because of all of that. So I wasn't really offended by it. It was just, I knew it wasn't the right time. Mm-hmm. And for me, I really lucked out that it didn't work out that way.
Right, right. You know, musicians in general, and maybe, you know, just a couple more questions for you as we wrap it up. But in general, musicians or any artist has to go through a lot of rejection. Any thoughts or tips you want to share on that? Because I just think that's part of life. And as soon as people in any field of endeavor come to terms with it, the better off they'll be. You know, you just got to learn how to manage that, right?
Absolutely. And there's, you know, there's a time for like, you know, at some point after you've been rejected by or just it's not going your way for far too long. Mm-hmm. I know everyone wonders like, well, what is this? Why is it like I have so many talented musician friends and, you know, they haven't got a record deal yet or they haven't become, you know, successful, quote unquote, successful in that world yet. And I don't know the reasoning for it. Their songs are beautiful, their voices, everything about it. And yet it hasn't happened yet. Yeah. And then in some other ways, you have to think maybe it's not that one path wasn't the right path for you or this time wasn't the right timing. It's still a question that I think all of us ask, but I guess just to stay doing what you love to do and work hard and maybe be prepared in every other aspect of it so that you're ready for the next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Good advice. Good advice. A couple last things. Patrick asked, what are your primary influences, musical influences from songwriters and musicians?
I grew up in Southern California and my parents were into, you know, classic rock, Tom Petty, right. Fleetwood Mac, Steve Miller, mm-hmm. Joni Mitchell, all of that. So those were my initial influences. And that's why my first album, Coco, had the bright, sunny acoustic guitars, like just screaming sunshine, because that's where I was from. And that's right. The music I listened to. Bob Marley, reggae music. And then Lauryn Hill, she was the one that like made me really want to be a singer. Uh-huh. And then John Mayer, like as a songwriter, just, you know, all of those soulful acoustic. Yeah.
Sure, sure. Good stuff. Colby, what's next for you?
I started this band with my fiance and my friend Jason Reeves, who I've written most of my songs with, and his wife. So it's the four of us, and we're recording our songs right now. So that's the next step. I have some other things, but they're not finished yet. So, well, just in case they don't come out yet. But yeah, there's some things I'm working on. I know I've taken a bit of a break, so... My website is just, all of my social media is just my full name, Colby Calais. Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.